First off, I missed the last meeting, unfortunately. I apologize for that. did everybody get a copy of the minutes that was here? Any objections to the minutes? Any changes? Motion to approve? Want to approve the minutes?
I wasn't here either.
Oh, okay. No wonder it was like that. Okay.
Can you make a motion if you weren't here?
Yeah. All right. I guess we'll pass the minutes on, then it's approved without any objections.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, good, because we held about three sets of minutes at one point, going back 18 months, until we realized that all it takes is a motion from the chair to approve. And the reason we were holding them back was there weren't quorums that stretched back, but that's not relevant, so I'm glad you approved them. I have two announcements, if that's okay.
Please.
One is we have a new member to the Finfish Management Advisory Committee, Bob Sinclair, who's on the end there from Smithfield.
No, Virginia Beach.
Virginia Beach?
Yes.
Ah, I was once right. Okay. Now from Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
And avid recreational fisherman, and look forward to having you on the Finfish Management Advisory Committee. This committee is advisory. What that means is the commission has several advisory committees, and this is one of them. There's also one for blue crab, also one for shellfish. And so what happens is whatever deliberations are done here, if there's motions, if there's anything to carry forward, it goes to the commission as part of the advice. Staff is also an advisory group for the commission. So, you know, most of the times, I think looking back at the track record, and I can look back pretty far, there's pretty good coherence between advisory committees and staff. Occasionally, little differences, but, you know, I think there's been great improvements in that, and that works out very well. The second announcement I have is we have Pat Gear on staff now. Pat's right here. Pat spent 16 years in Georgia. He was chief of the DNR down in Georgia. Prior to that, Pat was here in Virginia. He was at the Virginia Institute of Marine Sciences for 11 years and was leading the trawl survey, which you hear about quite often, the one that's gone from 1955 to the present. So Pat's going to be a excellent person to have on staff. We're really happy that Pat's here. You may have missed Joe Cimino leaving. Joe was here just under 14 years. He left. He's in New Jersey now, working in New Jersey in a administrator position. As I was walking up the steps, I thought, Joe has gone from the oven to the open fire, because New Jersey has a lot of things going on all the time. But I think he'll do very well. So with those two announcements, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. All right, the first item today is our good friend Doug Jenkins, who used to be a member of the committee, has a request for us to consider concerning striped bass in recreational fishing and commercial fishing, too, possibly. So at your convenience, Doug, when you're ready.
Sure. Do you want me to come forward the podium, or can I address it here?
If you're comfortable there, I think that's fine.
I'll be
pull the mic and to
I'll be more comfortable here, and I wouldn't be down there because this chair is real soft. You hear me all right? I think most of you, first, Mr. Chairman, thank you for recognizing me. And I want to thank Rob and Ron for helping me get this on the agenda. I think you have the proposal before you. But for those in the audience who's not familiar with the proposal, I'll rather than reading it word for word, I'll try to sum it up. As most of you know, since the beginning, the recreational fisherman doesn't have to tag their catch. they know that limit, and they, I would say, a lot of them try to abide by that, and then there's others that don't. So there's really no accountability for the man of Feast Day Harvest during a regular season. And but for the commercial fishermen, there is accountability because we have to tag them, and then we have to, whoever we sell to, they have to verify that check, and we're subject to audit each year, which is all right. That's way, you know, that's way it should be. But our request is that the recreation do the same thing, that they have a tagging program. And it can be set up. I've done a study on this back when Jack was here. And how long has he been gone, Rob?
2014.
2014. I presented it to Jack, and at the time I didn't know he was leaving, but he knew he was, so he didn't bother to follow through with it. But basically, it's potential for 257,800 recreational fishing, state of Virginia. Not all of those fish for striped bass. And, but if you break that down into the a quota that they would be allowed it, it would equal out to about 5.5 pounds per fish per fisherman. And I realize that all of those that are subject or can fish wouldn't be fishing for striped bass. So my proposal and request would be that as if different fishermen get their license or whatever they be, whether it's a regular license for the season or whether it was out of state, it was, they have very many different kinds of license for the recreational fishing. And that once they purchase that license, they would be equal tags for that amount, which would be not very much, 5.5 pounds, but if they didn't use that tag, they could give it to the neighbor or pass it along. And someone that fish regular could have as many as 5 or 6 licenses or 10 or whatever they want to pursue. This way, the MRC staff would not have to be dealing with issuing tags and collecting tags and whatever. Whoever the agents they got around selling tags, selling license, would have a limited amount of tags. Once those tags are gone, then someone coming behind them wouldn't be able to get in it. And that's not unfair. I mean, the commercial fishermen haven't allowed any commercial people come in and harvest fish since they put this quota system in gear. That would, this would include, charter boats, head boats, fishing piers, the whole thing that makes this 257,850-some license. Let me go over this and see if I've left out anything. And I think if you really think about it, it's a fair way of doing it. Since ASMFC is so strict on a commercial fisherman, and they should be just as well on a recreational, way we feel. The standards and procedures for interstate fishery management plans stresses in there that the social and economical impacts and benefits must be taken into account. It doesn't say it should be or it can be. It says it must. And talking to a lawyer, he said that must in there, whoever wrote this thing up knew what he was doing, because there's no way of getting around that. Legally, it must be done. And it hasn't been done. And also in that same management plan, it says, management measures shall focus on the conservation while allowing states to make allocation decisions. And that's something I love. When I read that and when that was pointed out to me, I've never heard that over the meetings I've attended to in the past year. It was always ASMSC said we had to do it this way. Do any of y'all have a charter of the ASMSC on this advisory board? Have read it? I'm sure you have, Rob. There are indications in there where we have, if we have a emergency situation, we can make provisions or requests to change it. And the reason why, some of you are thinking, why should you go this way? Begin with, we think it should have been done years ago, and we wouldn't be here tonight. The 20% reduction that we took 3 years ago, that was supposed to be given back to us this year, and it hasn't been, didn't happen. Our watermen associations, we had a meeting during the winter months, and realizing that we may not never get it back like they've taken some of the others away, we decided that we was losing our rockfish quota, and at the same time we're losing our crab industry. Some of these gentlemen up here probably haven't seen it. I'm going to pass a few pictures around of what's in the belly of Pan Rock. And we have millions and millions of them in the upper part, the bay, in the rivers of these Pan Rock. Just give me a minute. I'll find it here somewhere. I got them. We cited at our waterman's meeting, since we're losing our rockfish quotas and we're losing our crab industry, that we had enough. And, he's got it. Same one. Yeah, same one.
We passed. Go ahead. We shared it.
Oh, you shared it? Okay. So we either going to get treated fairly and have our quota returned back to us, and our long range plan, is for to have the recreational fishermen come on board, because we don't want to do any harm to them whatsoever. Our goal is to have a longer season for the recreational fishermen and more fish to catch. But at the same time, what you laughing at? You think that's funny?
It's going to be not a very long season, 5.5 pounds per
bite. Yeah, well, we want to change that. We want our bay fishermen to catch the fish that we have down here. So maybe I hadn't gotten to that yet. You sort of jumped the gun. Let me finish what I have to say. (clears throat) Delaware Bay has a fishery, the Hudson River has a fishery, and we have very little access to them. Most time they come down the coast, they go offshore 20 miles, and none of you can catch them. When they go back up north that same way. So, I got documentation back in the 60s and 70s, and there's some fishermen that I'm looking at right now back behind me will verify this. The size of the striped bass that was harvested in the bay then was 12 and 14 inches. We caught them by the tons. But at the same time, it didn't hurt our crab industry. We had crabs, plenty of crabs. If you don't think this is a serious matter, most of the people that set the pots last of March and 1st of April is taking them up. My son took a trailer load up today. So let's get on board, get out to ASMSC. That's my plans. That's our plans. We're making progress on it now. And everybody says you can't do it, but in the charter, it has a way to do it or change the method that they, that we're dealing with, because most of them served and went to a lot of the ASMSC meetings, say we're hitting our head against a brick wall. We can't accomplish anything. Are there any questions? I'm sure there's some concern.
I have several.
Okay.
Are you ready for questions?
I'm ready.
I'm sorry, I don't understand. What is the primary objective that you're trying to achieve?
I'm trying to get some type of accountability established, for one. And as it is now, it's not. I know recreational fishermen, I have a quota, or average given that quota in the state of Virginia now is 1,500 pounds. I know recreational fishermen catch more than that during the season. They never get a telephone call asking them how many fish they caught. They fish in the morning, they make 2-3 trips in the morning, they make 2-3 in the afternoon, then they go that night and fish with crabs. So I want some accountability. That's the number one objective. And we don't have it.
All right. Okay, John. I have a couple. May I continue?
Yeah, let's do the next one.
All right, thank you. You quoted 257,800 recreational fishermen. My understanding is there are approximately 500,000 licensed recreational fishermen. Perhaps staff can comment on that. Or
250,000 is a good number.
It is a valid number.
Oh, wow.
Who's going to bear the cost of this program?
License fees can pay for the cost of the tag. It don't have to be in the program.
Well, certainly there would be cost involved with having these tags made, distributing the tags, and then collecting them back to provide the accountability. And I'm just, my question is, who's going to bear that cost?
It wouldn't be no turning it back. It'd be that if you was in possession of a striped bass and it wasn't tagged, you'd get a summons, you'd get a ticket.
Well, if you don't collect the tags and the data off of them, where does the accountability come from?
Got to have accountability over the entire fishery, not just individuals. You're talking two different things, I think.
I don't think so, Tom.
No. There's accountability. What he's talking about is accountabilities for the individuals exceeding the daily limit, which is the only accountability we have now, which no matter how you do the tags, is the only thing you're going to be going against. I'll get my turn to talk in a minute.
All right. can I cut in for a minute?
Sure.
Doug, I see where you're coming from, and to me, I can see why you feel that way. The timing's not exactly right or perfect because we've got a stock assessment this year for striped bass. know more about the health of the fishery. We have MRIP, which is going to come out with some new catch estimates for recreational fishermen by the end of the year. Actually, by the end of the summer, isn't it, Rob?
July 2nd.
It's going to throw a wrench into everything that we've got because they're saying the numbers are so skewed and they're going to be so much greater that they're going to have to reassess, go back in history and reassess the way we've done fisheries management for years. Now, stop me if I'm wrong, but when they go back and estimate how many we've been catching based on the new data, the new methods, there's going to be some big changes. Is that right, Rob?
There's going to be big changes, but we don't know which direction or how things will work out. But there's right. going to be big changes. It's not all about a grand change. It's going to be done by mode of fishing, private boat, shore, head boat. It's going to be different for different times. It's not going to just be one statistic where it's like three times more than it was before. But in some cases, certain modes and certain times, it's going to be six times as more. And so we know there are going to be big changes. What we don't know yet is how the data will be fed to the models. That has to be done. There'll be a new assessment for the first two assessments are going to be summer flounder and striped bass that will use the new data. In 2019, it'll be black sea bass. So little by little, all these assessments, stock assessments, which are mathematical treatments through a model, and they really just have a very simplistic conclusion. What's the fishing mortality rate, and how large is the spawning stock biomass? That's what these models are all about. The other subplot here is that if there are big changes, you're going to see people who want to jump on the allocation schemes that we have in different species. Summer flounder, for about 25 years, there's been a call to give more to the recreational. Right now it's 60 commercial, 40 recreational. That was a big story without any data change. So now with the data change, you're going to see those things as well. It's going to take about 2 years before everything calms down. No one's looking forward to this. It is a big change. If you want some comments, Mr. Jenkins, on your proposal, I'd be happy to give them when you're ready on the tagging of striped bass for recreational fishing.
Let me finish.
So whenever you want that, you let me know.
Okay. This is also going to affect what we think is the stock size. If we find out we've taken, in some cases, 3 to 6 times more than we thought we could, which under the old math would have wiped out the stocks, then this is going to throw a wrench in everything we thought we knew about estimating stock size or everything we've done so far. So it's going to change all of the calculations, how many fish we have to share and how we're going to do them. So
if I can ask you, I'd like to know the bottom line on it. Are you telling me it's going to be worse than what it is now, or is it going to be better? Or you don't know?
I don't think anyone really has those answers right now. We just know it's going to be different. So what the chair is talking about, let's take summer flounder. It's this close to being overfished right now. There hasn't been good recruitment since 2009. It's possible that we embark on an a rebuilding schedule for summer flounder. Striped bass, same way. I know we see lots of small striped bass. Striped bass has had one good year class since 2007, one fantastic year class, 2011. Everything else is average or below average. So what's that going to look like? I mean, so these are things to be aware that there are going to be changes. I think it's too early to say how it's going to change, because the main thing that happened here for people wondering what the heck has happened is for years, since 1979, there was a random digit dialing system that National Marine Fisheries Service had for coastal county households. And they use that to come up with effort. I'm going to make this really easy. You get effort, and they use this field survey where they go around and hit you at the docks and see what you caught, and they get a catch rate for the state. And they put those two survey-type pieces together, and they get your harvest or your landings. Well, they decided probably 5-6 years too late that the telephone calling wasn't really very productive because we had the advent of cell phones. And after the advent of cell phones, pretty much everyone's getting rid of their household number and everything else. So this is the big change. It's because they did a mail survey, a pilot survey for mail. They mailed and they telephoned at the same time back to back. And they're using the results from the mail versus the telephone to do this scaling, this recalibration. But I don't understand yet what it's going to mean. I just worry about the species that are very close to being in a problem situation, that might make things a little bit difficult for us and for other species as well.
Thank you. Let John finish, yeah. If you'd like.
I yield.
All right. Yes, please.
I'm a recreational fisherman, and striped bass is my favorite fish to target, although there have been darn few of them in the last few years that were big enough to keep where I fish, Lower James River, Lower Chesapeake Bay. I'm all for having improved data on what the catch is, because I think that's essential to good fisheries management. And I wouldn't mind, you know, having a system to improve the accuracy of the data on catch, whether that be tag or better surveys or what. My issue is that I think one of the primary reasons, if not the reason, that we have so much fewer rockfish in the lower bay to catch is that their main forage species, menhaden, has been seriously depleted. And I would be willing to take more harsh measures on the recreational catch for a few years if there was also a dramatic decrease in the amount of tonnage of menhaden that are allowed to be taken each year from the Chesapeake Bay. So that's my piece on it.
Right, thank you. Tom, you had something you wanted to add?
First to Rob, the one thing on MRIP with their mail-in survey, my real concern with that, first off, the phone number list they got with that when they first did the the Fisherman Identification Program here, I went through that, and I was bored, really bored one weekend. And I did a random sample I got the data from staff, did a random sample of the 200,000 numbers that were phone numbers in there, and then went back and did a reverse lookup on the numbers, and I could identify the name that matched the name on the license and F at least 50% of the time I got a match. Maybe it was 70%. So that was a really good phone number list as far as doing a survey. I am concerned with a mail-in survey, and please make sure your staff reviews the distribution of the number of trips to ensure that it's not skewed high. My concern is there are so many fishermen out there that go 3 times a year, and the ones that are going to respond are the ones that go 10 times a month or 5 times a month or whatever, and so the data is going to be skewed to more effort because they're the ones who are going to bother filling out the mail-in form and sending it back. And I'd like to know how NOAA is dealing with putting the data in for the people and accounting for the people who just don't fish much and aren't going to respond. As far as the number of fishermen, yeah, I believe Doug's number is close. I mean, we've talked about this before. I've looked at the numbers, and there's like 30,000 boat licenses. I don't know what it is this year, but it may be 50, 60,000 individual licenses, but most everybody does the Fisherman Identification Program. And I don't know how you're going to get tags to people like me. I go online to get my license. Most people do. I have a boat license. You know, who do I take out with me? I do register them with the, but how do they get a permit? You know, if it's a free permit that comes with your license, they don't have a license. I think this is a horrible idea to require a permit. I don't like the, a tagging system for recreational fishermen. I don't like all the permits we have now, but I can see why they are done. I still don't see a logic for why we even need to think about this. It'll create a gray market for tags. The guys who will, the people who will get the tags off of this gray market are the ones that actively go out and try to seek them, and people will not give them away. I'm confident they'll be sold even if it's illegal. And one person, one ticket, one tag per person, which is what you're talking about, doesn't even get you a daily limit. I just think that this is just not a good idea. I don't think it should be done, and that's just the way I feel about it.
All right, thank you, Doug. Considering the timing and of the upcoming assessment and MRIP changes, is this something that you could table for a few months, or at least till this time next year?
We've lost 3 years of 20% quota, which shouldn't have been dumped on us in the first place, and that equals to $1.5 million, and the watermen are not in the high income bracket, and that means a lot of money to them. We're starting with this, Chairman Dean. We started back in the winter working on this. I'll just give you one idea of some things that we're gonna push. That picture you see of this rock feast full of crabs, we're gonna make posters up. And that feast is gonna be right in the center of that poster. And we're gonna tell people, catch pan-sized rock and eat more of them, so our crab lovers will have an affordable price for their crabs. That's one thing we're going to do. The other thing we're going to do, we're going to take legal action. Too long, we've been pushed back, and it's time that we're not going to be pushed anymore. We're going to make a stand. And I'm going to have a meeting with the governor, and I'm going to have some people there to present facts. I got facts to prove that we can have a healthy rock fishery in this bay and have a healthy crab fishery all at the same time, because it's happened before and it can happen again. And that's why that we're concerned about this. And while if I can, Mr. Chairman, I have to respond to the gentleman here about Menhaden. There's more Menhaden in that area now than I've seen in my lifetime. I had one fisherman with a 5 foot depth gill net, 3 1/4 mash, had 2 nets, 300 feet long, and he sold 20 some thousand pounds of bunkers in the last month. We got 2 trap netters across the river, and they're loading the boats every day. So, you know, I don't know what you got down here. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Potomac River. And it was this little creek the guy had his gill nets in. So when you tell me there's a lack of bunkers, I don't want to hear it.
Because I know. Talking about it in the lower bay and James River.
It's maybe something going on down here, but I tell you what, I see it with my eyeballs, so, and I don't have to read it off paper. But I mean, that's a fact, and I can prove it. If you want documentation, I can send it to you.
There may be plenty of Menhaden where you're talking about up in the upper bay, up north here. I'm talking about lower bay.
And plenty of rock there, too. You guys go, when you put that 20-inch fish length on there, they catch 75 or 80 fish before they get the 20-inch one. Well, according to ASMSC records, hook and line fishing, the mortality rate is 10%. So I don't think they've done anything by that except for cut out 20% quota back on that. And another thing I don't understand is this. The recreational fishing in Maryland has got it lowered down to 19 inches. The commercial fish has got a 100,000 pound increase in their quota because they didn't make the quota last year. I don't see anything coming out of VMRC that equals that. Why is it that we in the same bay, yet they get more quota, can do more things, and we can't? That's, you know, this is an issue that we have to raise. That's why we're here tonight. And I'm sorry if I stepped on any of you's foot, but if we work together, we can get out to ASMSC. I'm sure of that. Congressman Rob tells me that he knows the Secretary of Commerce very well. Well, the Secretary of Commerce is over the ASMSC, as far as I know. Any other questions?
Okay, Doug, this is a very unusual meeting, but it's an unusual presentation. Scott had something that he wanted to say, and then we'll go to staff. I probably maybe shouldn't have said anything myself, but...
I was going to agree with Doug on the small rock. Our pound netter that I buy from out of Kiptopeek has seen more small rock this year than he's ever had. He's had to roll his nets over because they're all too little to tag. And they disappeared now, and the menhaden have showed up. And I have called around and cannot find a market for them. Everybody has got plenty of menhaden in the freezer, and there's the market. So he had to roll his nets to let them go too, and he's right there in Kiptopeek. So we're seeing a lot of small rock and a lot of bunkers, the lower end of the bay right there on the eastern shore.
Good.
Okay. So. All right, Rob, would you like to respond?
So I don't want to get crosswise with anyone. That's what I try to avoid. I've known Doug Jenkins a long time, and he's made a lot of contributions.
Absolutely.
And has been very active for many, many years. So what I tell you are just some facts, the way that at least I know them. When you talk about the recreational tagging, some of these ideas have been brought up anyway, but we are paid to do our recreational survey by the National Fisheries Service. And we have a five-year period where they will pay for us to do this. We started in 2016. All the states now do this MRIP, Marine Recreational Information Program. And because of that, I'm not even sure, although theoretically it would be great if we could figure out a way to get accountability for the recreational fishery. It would take the kind of things that have been said here. You would have to know more than just giving out tags. You would have to know the return tags. You have to figure out how many fish are caught. Everything that MRIP does, and MRIP does get criticized, there's no doubt about it. Many of you have heard that. But we are now in MRIP, and if we do something else, let's just take it from one step at a time. If we do something else, are we going to be able to do something else? Is ASMSC going to say, okay, don't worry about MRIP, do something else? Well, then how do we pay for that? Someone brought that up. How do we pay for that? We definitely would need at least a position, maybe a position and a half in this agency. Right now we have one person working 60% of the time doing striped bass tags and keeping track of the striped bass fishery. So there's just practicalities. The other situation is, I don't know where this notion of quota came from. Quota is gone for the recreational fishery. It disappeared in 2014 when they did this addendum 4 to the striped bass management plan. We no longer have a recreational quota. We just have the regular old either size, season, possession limit, and that's it. So the heart is in the right place, but the practicality really gets challenged to to think about this, and I don't think it's going to get any better after Enric does this recalibration. I really don't. We are not a high-profile agency. I shudder when I look at it, but I know some commissioners previously go and say we've had 18 budget cuts in the last 21 years. It's, you know, we have personnel in law enforcement that is less than we had in 1989. We have a fishery staff which is pretty much static through time, with the exception of mandatory reporting folks. It's not a really good picture to figure out how we would even do this, Doug. I mean, I don't know how we would even do this because of the practical nature of doing it. The other part of this is the commercial end of it, and I think there are people here looking tonight to maybe talk about the commercial quote increase. So I want to give a little bit of a history lesson because I look real young, but I've been around a little while. And we went to a moratorium in 1989, from June of 1989 until November of 1990. We came out of the moratorium because the Maryland Juvenile Abundance Index for 3 years had averaged enough to get us out there. 8 was the magic number. The whole coast was able to be opened up. We opened up our commercial fishery with 211,000 pounds. And we stayed there through 1994. In 1995, we were able to successfully, with the ASMFC saying rockfish recovery, we were able to get up to 860,000. In 1996, we were able to get up to 1.43 million pounds. In 1997, we joined with Maryland. They invited us into their house, and the house was the harvest control method and a bay-wide quota for recreational and commercial fisheries. For 17 years, up until 2014, we could determine in the bay what we did. As long as we didn't go over the 10.5 million pounds for recreational and commercial fisheries, we had the ability to adjust quotas. Now, what you see up here is not the whole picture, but in 2003, that's the last time we had that 1.78 million pound quota. And then variations were made. We used something called exploitable stock biomass, so we did make some changes. When we went to the ASMFC in 2014 and they made us cut by 20.5% in both the recreational and the commercial fisheries, that's where the recreational fishery went to 20 inches and the commercial fishery took that 20.5% decrease. So what we did, it took 8.5 hours. That was an 8.5 hour meeting. And about the 8 hour mark, people had forgotten what they said during hour 2 and 3. But we were able to successfully say, do not reduce us from 2013. That is a double jeopardy because we in the Bay had voluntarily reduced our quota that year because of exploitable stock biomass going down. We said, you must reduce us from 2012 right here. And that's what the reduction was from, 20.5%. And here you see the result for 3 years. I think it's about 1.16 million pounds. This agency and this commission, over time, was able to improve the lot of the commercial fishermen tremendously and the recreational fishermen. Back in the early 90s, you had a four-day season, Thursday through Sunday, 32 days total. 1995, it was 107 days. We went to ASMFC and successfully lobbied that. 1996 went up to 120 days, and that's where it stands now. So I'm telling you this because it is what happened. So there's one other thing. What you're asking for, I went to last year's ASMFC meeting at this time of year, last May, and we asked for a 10% liberalization. The Bay states, along with Delaware and New Jersey, were in support of not just for the bay, but for the entire, all the states. 10%, that's all we were asking. The fishing mortality rate was slightly below target. We said, let us have 10%. Let our quotas go up 10%. Let's work on the recreational fishery, get down to where they are, maybe get them down a little bit. And you can see at the very end of that, and you're welcome to go to the ASMFC website and choose fisheries management and get on Atlantic striped bass and scroll down, and you can get the May 2007 meeting, because that's just part of it. But the main thing is that I put in there, look at the vote. That is the same kind of vote we faced in 1996 when it took three meetings for the Bay states to convince the ASMFC that we could have a Bay-wide quota that we enjoyed for 17 years. Three meetings, because there's something called block voting. If you get above New Jersey, you're out of the block. That's the big block. And that continues to be the same thing. So we were turned down 1 year ago by the ASMFC for a 10% liberalization. And so things haven't changed with the management. It hasn't changed one bit. So someone mentioned earlier that they're going to do this mathematical assessment at the end of this year. It's going to be peer-reviewed by early 2019, and probably by the May or August meeting of 2019. If the stock assessment shows better health on that terms, not the way we see, we're not about little fish, but on the assessment, then there's a chance that we can say we want things relaxed a little bit. But we can't do that by ourselves anymore in the Bay. That's over. That ended in 2014. They took it away from us, quite frankly. So we do have to wait and see. I talked to Tony Kearns yesterday. I heard there were going to be some harvesters coming down wanting more quota. The only person who called me was Kenny Pearson. I don't know whether he's here. I didn't scour or went back there. But Kenny Pearson and I talked for a while and didn't hear from anybody else as far as the plausibility of going to the ASMFC, banging on the doors, and saying, we want more. So although I really like to see everyone here tonight, and hope you make it a more frequent visit, because quite frankly, all of our committees and all the ASMFC public hearings we have are poorly attended the last 5 or 6, 7 years. And I don't know what that means. I'm not a critic, but it's not good. So whatever you have to do, that's fine. But you have to know that the Bay has made an attempt 1 year ago, and nothing has changed in the minds of the ASMFC. Tony Kearns, who's the second person in charge of fisheries, she's the coordinator, interstate coordinator. I called her and said, look, what's your viewpoint on all this? And she gave me the same thing I just told you, that, well, we've got to do the stock assessment. It's a benchmark stock assessment. That doesn't mean anything to a lot of people, but what it means is they can try anything they can to make it the best assessment. And then after that, there'll be what's called a peer review, where there'll be a panel of experts who peer review the assessment. And then after that, we'll all get to know what the story is. So,
have any idea how long that would take, Rob?
The assessment's going to be done by probably October, November. Then you have to have a peer review. That'll bring it into the spring of 2019. So here's some more information so you can see, everyone can see. Yes, compared to where things were, this isn't favorable. Same with the recreational fishery. I think they think a 20-inch fish, and Jeff talked to me earlier, can we go to 19 inches? Well, you have to realize Maryland's requiring circle hooks and also said that their proposal will get rid of discards.
Wasn't in the final regulation. They took it out.
They took it out.
They took it out because the charter fishermen went to the governor. So hope the ASMFC looks at that, because that was part of the situation. And they're going to get rid of discards. And someone mentioned earlier, and I don't even want to show it, but I can talk about it. I've got it right here. Alex worked it up for us. We were powerhouses in the recreational fishery back in 2004, 5, and 6. After that, it was all downhill. So 2017 was 51,000 fish. 2006 was 358,000 fish. The last several years have been somewhere between 51 and 110,000 fish. Nothing compared to where this fishery was. If you look at Maryland, Maryland had 580,000 fish in 2017. In one day, what is going on? And they average 400,000 to 500,000 as far back as you can see. That's number of fish. We had 290,000 pounds in the recreational fishery in 2017, 838,000 pounds in 2016. Maryland had 3.5 million and 4.3 million pounds in those years. So, you know, I think you ought to know the information is not that good. I think I heard Jack mention that earlier on, and I've heard people say, well, heck, might as well think about something else. So it's not our only fishery that after 2007 things have declined some way. So, and again, I'm not trying to counter anyone. I'm not trying to make anyone think that VMRC is being a pain. I'm just trying to tell you that we feel as badly as a lot of you do that we no longer can decide what our quota is going to be, what our harvest regime can be. You know, I don't know if it comes back. I don't know if the science would be there in the bay to do another harvest control model. I don't know that we could convince, let's just say things turn out well. If they do, can we get back to where we were before? I don't know. I have concern. I know I'm hearing you, Doug, and others about small fish that Scott just mentioned, but when they do this assessment, they're doing it really on the what they call fully recruited fish and larger. So these are larger fish. You know, something's got to give at some point, but right now we're not in a very good shape that way. And I know the Maryland group, they had the charter boat guys up there last year in May. They gave a lot of testimony. They had the commercial guys, Robert T. Brown and others. They gave testimony. We didn't have anyone up there, but I certainly vouched for everything going on. And a 10%, that's all we were asking. And the, what's really bad about the 10% is that when they voted it down, it meant they wouldn't even send that out to the public. It was Addendum 5. What you do is you make a public information document, and it goes out to the public. When they voted it down, it didn't even go out to the public. First time that anyone's been turned down to go out to the public. So you didn't even get a chance to see it after last May. So that's where we are. It doesn't take away from anything that you want to think or do. It just tells you that this is the kind of situation that we're having to look at. Here's one more slide. This tells you the progression by gear type. You know, going over the last 5 years, and I think you know that Gillnet has been a major gear for quite some while. What I was happy to see here is the pound net picked up a little bit, because there were some years where it was starting to be challenged a little bit, at least halfway, by hook and line.
Mr. Chairman, could I make a couple comments to Rob?
Please.
y'all should be aware of it. I don't know where you are or not. The reason you don't have many fish down here in the lower part of the bay is because they move offshore. And North Carolina has been doing surveys now for several years, Ron Rogers from Reedville, very good charter boat captain and fisherman. He goes offshore, and they tag him, the group from North Carolina, by all the fish.
We permit that boat. We permit.
Yeah. Some days it catches 90 to 100, right, bass, 40 to 50 pounds.
They have good days. That's the
some days they don't. Yeah, well, you know, you have that anywhere. Fish don't bite every day. I go turkey hunting. Sometimes I can call one in and miss it, and sometimes I can't. But that's it. Other thing is, you said that we don't have a quota now.
Not recreational. We don't have a recreational quota.
But we have a commercial quota.
We have a commercial
quota. Another point we're being discriminated against. Just adds more to the file. Is anybody here know what a lead fish is on this committee?
Not me.
Anybody down there know what a lead fish is? Anybody down here?
One in front.
You're getting there. All schools of fish has a lead fish. And take my word for it, this summer, when it's warm, go down in your pier. If you got one, if you haven't, go to your neighbors. And watch a little school of bunkers, alewives, come up. And you get a couple of pebbles in your hand. And you throw it out there in front of that school. And whichever way that lead fish goes, the whole school goes. It's something I've studied over the years. I mean, you know, the old people told me that.
I've had some time to do that.
Yeah, right. Now I've had some time. I'm getting up that road. You see a flock of geese going, they have a lead bird, but they change that every now and then. And what I'm about to tell you is when them fish, big schools of fish from Chesapeake Bay move off in the ocean out there, and the ones from Delaware and one of them comes down, they join up out there for the winter, and when they go back up, whichever lead fish is in control of that big school, the other fish is going to follow it. And my theory is, and of course, it would cost them's probably $500,000 for the study to find out, but it's very, very true. Probably they're taking a lot of our fish up the coast.
Can we retrain the lead fish? Stay down here.
Well, it would probably take several $500,000 for to do that. But the fish are out there, and the other thing you mentioned, how Maryland, the catches they was taking in Virginia down here, they may have a better accountability there. I don't know if it's all it's supposed to be all the same. You know.
Well, I love this, and I think what's changed is years ago, say 10 years ago, they used to really have a good recreational fishery in September and October. And then fish moved down. In the last few years, they're right into December. So temperature is a little bit different.
Water temperature, and that's because the bait don't move down. The small, I was asked Mary from Vims, she could come tonight, but she called you and you said you didn't think it would need to be, but she could address some things like that. One thing that I would like for her to address was Dr. Van Eagle from Vims years ago, who was a crab biologist, and him and I worked together on some things, and he told me then, and I think he has it recorded at Vims, your juvenile crabs, your little baby crabs the size of your fingernails, migrate up the bay and the rivers, and they stay in water around 8 parts salinity. And that's the same area that the small rockfish stay in. In other words, they occupy the same room. And the little baby crabs can't eat 12 and 14-inch rockfish. So you know who gets eaten. And
Mary, if you talked about Mary.
Yeah.
Mary has a publication that's going to be looked at by on striped bass that, and I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to. I just received it today. That's going to be provided to the recreational board that we have here, and I'll make sure that Jeff gets it so he can distribute it to everyone, so that you can look at that.
She also told me, Rob, they were going to do a study on these blue catfish, and which I tried to get them to do, you know.
Years ago, well, 2012.
Four years ago, but now they're going to try to get money for to do it.
It's going to happen July 1. They're going to start, and in higher salinity, because the Virginia Tech study was well up in the James. So, you know, they're going to be down in the James. So that's something that'll be good. I mean, it's going to at least be adding to the information.
Okay. Doug, while all this plays out, is there something that we can do? Is there another fishery that we can make viable for you so that you guys have something to catch? Could you catch more catfish if we could get the federal government to let them open another processing plant? Or is there still a market for snakeheads? Where can we open things up for you so that you can make up for this rockfish? Because I can't see anything happening at least until that assessment's done and the AMRIP's done.
Well, we all here together, we at the mercy of the ASMFC, and you know how they act. I mean, Rob just got finished explaining what they do.
Yep, I know.
We got to get out of it. Well, we can get out of it if we band together, and that's the purpose of this tagging thing, is to get everybody on board, go to the governor, go to our representative, and explain to them and have the biologists, crab biologists, the fish biologists, because they want science. And you know what science is? It's studying, collecting, and knowledgeable facts of what's going on.
Okay.
And I have those. And I'm not going to be around here forever, but I mean, I can show you some of these guys here that is questioning my integrity. I'll show you the size fish that I caught and the amount of crabs I caught each day back in the 60s and 70s.
No, nobody's questioning your experience.
This is something that you don't get out of a book or not somebody's opinion. The size of rockfish on this day of March the 16th was 850 pounds of mixed rock and 450 pounds of rock 16 inches and up.
Right.
The whole catch, the only size net we used in was 4 inch and 4.5. We didn't catch any big fish. Matter of fact, it was against the law if you caught one over 15 pounds. You got a ticket for it.
Okay. We know the stock was up and it's gone down and it's come back to a certain extent.
Well, Cam and Dean, I'll show you the stock.
I appreciate it. Look, we're kind of running out of time.
We're running out of time?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, we believe
you. I have a draft here on the juvenile hatches and catches back there then shows you that for year in and year out, it wasn't any more spawn. It wasn't as much as it is right now. This area from 61 to 81, you had few peaks in there, but most of them was low years, and we caught that size fish. But we didn't grow it out, see what we've had here in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
If you add that many fish that stays in the bay compared to the size of what stays in there then and now, it's millions and millions and millions more. And that's what hurting our crabs. Thank you, Tammy.
Well, hopefully it'll show up in this new assessment. And hopefully all the seagrasses that are coming back to the bay will give the crabs some place to hide. And
except for they're not coming back in the lower
bay. Well, they've increased by magnitude of, I don't know what the difference is.
In the upper bay, yes. Not
right.
In the lower bay.
They'll get there, I think.
Well, we didn't.
Anyway.
That seagrass left us in 1961.
That's coming back. And the bay's getting cleaner.
The bay is getting cleaner.
That's a big
yes,
I think
sir.
I got a lot of hope for the future. John, did you have a question?
I do, too.
I was going to ask a question for staff, but if you're trying to wrap this up, I can hold it.
Well, if it's critical to the discussion.
Rob, when the last, by the way, I was at that ASMFC meeting. When they passed the last, I don't want to say restriction, but did the reduction, it was publicly stated, went in the record, it only had a 50% probability of success in terms of rebuilding the stock. In your discussions with other states, are you hearing anything favorable relative to perhaps that being rebuilt at all? Because I'm not. I know the peer review is in progress, but I mean, not peer review, the stock assessment is in progress, but I'm not hearing good stuff.
No, you're right about the 50%, but it was whether or not it would get to the target fishing mortality rate. That was the 50% chance or probability. You're right about that. No, because, I mean, what I'm concerned about striped bass is that part of the Addendum 4, which took the 20.5% cut and 25% on the coast, was to also conserve the 2011 year class while it was in the bay. And several people made a big deal about that because, you know, they're doing what they can to conserve it. I mean, when those size limits went into effect, for example, you missed out on fish. And then within a short time, 4 years minimum, and then after that, those fish are out. So they've been on the coast. So my concern is that if that was, let's just say that was the better year class than we've seen in a while, what has the coast done to that? And by the time they do the stock assessment, what are the expectations? That's a worrisome kind of situation. And, you know, it almost seems like some people say the bay is the nursery ground. Well, when you think about a good year class that we didn't do much with and then it's out, you know, maybe that's an apt characterization. So I think we have to wait and see. You know, I haven't either. Like you said, I haven't heard anyone come up to me and say the stock is looking good. And I know it's hard to imagine, but they do count the age 1 and older up to, you know, I think we've aged like a 23 or 24 fish, even though they say it lives to 30. So that's all counted in the overall living weight. But when it comes time to the stock assessment, they are looking at the older, fully recruited fish and larger. And if they're being fished on quite a bit, so starting in 2015, they're being fished in the coast. So you've got 4 years that, you know, they're undergoing fishing mortality. So, you know, it's... there have been better days, okay? I mean, that's the way I look at it when I go to the ASMSC. So, thank you.
Thank you. Anything else, Doug?
Well, there's more, but you seem like you pressed some for time now. But we would like for y'all to dwell on this.
I'm sure we will.
And let's meet here after these other meetings you're going to have with ASMFC. Meantime, we'll be pushing forward on some matters, and hopefully we can make a little accomplishment on those. I know if you don't want something of it, you can make a whole lot of excuses and all. Not to have it, but if you want something of it, you make excuses to have it. Other words, if there's a will, there's a way. So I'm asking, pleading to all of you, find a way for us to get out of this mess with ASMFC. We don't need it. We can regulate, and if we regulate our fishery, both recreational and commercial fishery want a fishery. Commercial fishermen don't want to catch it all. We want something over there for next year, as well as y'all do. So, I mean, but you always can accomplish better if you unite and work together. And this was one of the main purposes of having this on the agenda. We feel strongly that, you know, we've been discriminated against, and we'd like for that change, and any other way you can come up to make that change, idea, call Rob, we're him.
All right. Well, we appreciate your predicament, and I think we all want better accountability on both sectors. So we'll see where it goes. Hopefully this assessment will give us a good understanding of where the stock is and where it can go with the pressures that we have today. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
All right, staff, let's see. Mr. Avery had a couple of questions for you about striped bass, if I may bring those up at the moment. The measurement of striped bass is confusing among anglers. They would like a little better guidance on how to measure striped bass. Does that make sense?
No, I know the issue. I didn't know you were here. Okay. But yes, this goes back about 6 months. And after Mr. Avery gave me that request, I went to law enforcement, and their take on this was that they don't write tickets on the total length just based on the position of the jaw. And if you really think about it, and we could change this. We could change this next time we bring out striped bass. And so that's sort of a reminder for everyone up in the front row. It's really the tip of snout to the tip of tail, because the snout has a certain definition of what it is. It's not the tip of jaw or tip of mouth or anything else like that. It's the snout. And I think the remedy is to, after, where are we here now, 28 years, that we can change that.
But the law says total length.
Total length is fine, but what runs into a problem with Mr. Avery and others is the fact it doesn't say tip of snout, and the snout is different than tip of mouth. So.
But total length is set it down, look at the shadow, that's the length. If the jaw comes out further, then it's tip of jaw.
Well, it's the snout.
No, that's not what the word total length means.
No, not
means.
In now.
We can define it.
Not in now, Tom.
Yes.
But guess what? I work for the state. And in the state, we have something called the Register of Regulations. And if I say total length means...
Oh, if you define it that way, that's fine.
I can say anything that is applicable. And that's what we're going to do.
Okay.
I hope that helps, Mr. Avery.
I appreciate it.
What you're saying is you're going to change it, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, it's going to take...
Forgive me, Jeff.
Striped bass won't be up until probably the fall. But we will change that. Only because I've had the second reminder.
Okay, well, while I'm reminding you...
Oh, my God.
Did you? Did he ask you about the adjustment to the fall season or the season date?
No.
He would like to consider taking 2 weeks from October and adding them to January.
Very familiar with that. That's been a recurring request. As everyone probably can figure out in the Bay, we don't have any data for January. So typically, we'd have to run that through the ASMFC. Typically, they would just say, well, what are you going to use for data since you haven't had a fishery in January in the Bay ever? However, that's not stopping us. Alex is working on that proposal. I don't know when we'll have it done. I don't know all his methodology, but, you know, part of it is, I think, extending a catch rate in December, which, depending on how many years you use for an average, you'd have to do that because it's fallen off quite a bit, and then just assuming that that would roll over to January. And then you'd have to do the same thing on the back end and see how many fish are getting in that October window. But I encourage Mr. Avery to get in touch, and you know, we'll work on that as well. And then we also, on a pipe dream, are looking just to come up with a proposal to extend the season,
comparable to what Maryland and PRFC have for striped bass recreational. Now, all this will wait until we get through the schedule that I talked to you about earlier. So we are looking down the road. It's not something that we're going to be able to forge ahead with right now. We can sure try. I mean, Alex has already brought up the technical committee, but I'm concerned about the board meeting and what they will think. But we want to get our ducks in a row and get our extension of data, and we may try it early, see what they do. But we are going to try it, and that's been something that we've wanted on staff as well.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
By extending, do you mean number of days, or do you mean to the same types of season? I think it's a horrible idea to have a summer fishery in striped bass.
Yeah.
Just from a mortality standpoint, release mortality is way worse when the water temperatures are up.
Well,
extending days and saying we're going to add 2 weeks in January and a week in front of the October 4th opening, that's different.
Well, part of it is a lobbying effort. We don't, and, you know, if you go back far enough, Virginia anglers did not care one way or the other. It was like not even 50-50 to have a trophy striped bass season. That goes all the way back to 1995. Apathy about that. One thing we could do, Tom, is we could say, well, if we extend in the summer, we're just like Maryland and PRFC, but if we don't, that should give us some reason to extend around the corner into January. Another piece of ammunition.
I mean,
okay?
All right. Thank you.
All right. Have I cleared the hurdles?
Did you have a question, John?
The hard
no,
thing
I think
do.
That's all great information. Yeah. Thank you very
yeah,
much.
We have been working on it. And we have had talk to the technical committee.
I'm sure Alex's phone's going to start ringing now that that's on public record.
That's right. What's that extension?
All right. Doug, we really would like to help you guys find something else that you can make up with until we find out what condition the stock's in. So if there's something we can do for some other species.
Shad.
Spot and croaker are not doing well from what they said at the ASMFC meeting, so those are out, but we'd like to help.
Well, we appreciate that. Only we don't have many fisheries to choose from in that locality. In the Upper Bay in Potomac, we don't have flounder anymore because they just don't show up there. Like, and if we did, it'd have to be that long to satisfy the anglers down here. So we got a few local perch, but some of these guys fish for rockfish. That's half of their income for the whole year. They have bought quotas from other fishermen. They couldn't justify fishing because the quota was so low. And when you take 20% of that catch away from them, and they invested thousands of dollars in license, that hurts.
Right. I'm sure it does.
And like I say, we don't have any. It's unlike down in Little Part of the Bay in the ocean. You have... Sorry about that, but the thing needs to cover over there, I guess. Well, I appreciate your concern, Jeff, and
we'll give it some thought.
We'll give it some thought, but I hope y'all give it some thought on our request, because we certainly thought about it a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. I can see that. Excuse me, Scott.
The ocean took a 25% hit, and we don't catch... We used to catch gillnet bay fish in the mouth of the bay. We don't catch them anymore. Our boats actually have to go to Horn Harbor to catch their quota or transfer them to somebody up the bay anymore. We don't catch them down the mouth of the bay anymore.
And with your coastal quota, of course, Rob says we don't have a quota anymore. Your gillnet quota is 3,500 pounds, and ours is 1,500. So that's 2,000 pounds more that they're getting down here. And they're all Virginian, right?
They are Virginia, correct.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to get across to y'all. Just tie everybody with the same stick.
Okay, notes from the 28th, the ASMSC meeting is the next topic, I think. Do you sign that for us?
All right, good evening, everybody. This is going to be extremely brief.
Okay.
Could you adjust your mic, please? I'm having difficulty hearing. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm short and it doesn't extend. So we just had the ASMFC meeting last week, and the Summer Flounder Management Board approved the amendment public hearing document to seek public input on these four issues for summer flounder: the requalifying of criteria for federal commercial moratorium permits, the modifying of the commercial quota allocation, adding commercial landings flexibility as a framework issue in the council's fishery management plan, and revising the fishery management plan objectives for summer flounder. I'm only briefly going to go over the modifying commercial quota allocation. So the current commercial quota allocation was last modified in 1993, and this was based on landings from 1980 to 1989. Many believe that the allocations are outdated based on these very old landings data because of the changes in distribution of summer flounder and the biomass shifting and the fishing effort changes. The amendment public hearing document offers a range of alternative allocation systems to account for this northern shift in biomass since the original allocations were made. I'm not going to go into the allocation choices and the alternatives tonight, but we'll have a public hearing later in time to go into those in detail and get everybody's opinion on those. So that is summer flounder. Any questions for that?
Any questions from the committee? Okay.
And then the Tautog Management Board met very briefly to review Connecticut's proposal to keep their commercial measures as status quo, which deviate from what was voted on in the October meeting. The Connecticut region is part of the Long Island Sound with New York, and they were tasked with reducing landings in both the recreational and commercial fisheries by 20.3%. They did take reductions in the commercial fishery. They reduced by 20.3%, but the region decided that because the commercial landings only account for less than 1% of commercial or Connecticut's total landings, that it would impact their commercial fishermen greater than they expected. So the technical committee met to talk about this proposal, and they found that there was no negative impact that they saw to the stock, and the board approved the proposal of Connecticut's remaining status quo. And by foregoing this reduction, they would only result in a 0.1% projected overage of landings, which equals 295 fish. And that is Tautog.
And that's it.
Any questions?
Anybody? Guess not.
All right.
You did good.
Brief.
Thank you. And the next topic is cobia. I'm sorry.
Run through the species. There's no order. We're just going to.
Excuse me.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to make this brief. So as you know, striped bass from the MILVA benchmark stock assessment, which is scheduled for peer review in November of this year to assess the status of the stock and also to explore changes in some of the biological reference points. And so a guidance work group developed a survey that they sent out to the board members and advisory panel to get their ideas of whether or not they're satisfied the way of the way that, you know, striped bass are managed under Amendment 6. There wasn't a clear winner. Some were satisfied with the way striped bass were managed, some were not. And so the work group and the advisory panel recommend that the Stock Assessment Subcommittee bring forward to the board members a range of reference points rather than a set F threshold and spawning stock biomass threshold and target. So moving forward, the staff members will provide a range of reference points for the board to consider at the next meeting. And that's all I have for striped bass.
Okay, don't take me wrong. I didn't want you to be brief at the expense of being thorough. Is there anything else? We're here to do a job, so.
Sure.
Is there anything else that you need to add to that?
No, just that they're going to provide a range of reference points for the board to consider at the next meeting.
Okay. I was at that, and the impression I got was that there'll be a range, more like an if-then question in software. If you do it this way, then this is where the biomass target and threshold would be, and if you do it this way. There's a variety in that respect, in case anybody didn't quite understand what he meant by a variety.
Yes, that's correct.
So different ways to do the process, and if you do it in each way, then you can choose what the end effect is going to be, if I remember correctly. Is that right, Bob? Rob? Sorry, it's my allergies.
Right. It was interesting because the old school people, when you do a model, it usually spits out what your unsafe area is, your threshold. And there was a motion to amend what had been done to say, use that and then let the target be chosen by the board, which I thought was really neat because we don't choose targets anymore. It's usually left up to the model approach and the assessment committees and all that. So that was added on along with what Alex is describing, to where, to give an example, suppose you want, quote unquote, a better quality recreational fishery. That might be a different threshold target than if you want to increase yield overall. So, I mean, what I see with all this is it's well-intentioned, but you can imagine having four or five different thresholds and targets and trying to figure out which is the best when, just like anywhere else, some members of the board have certain ideas and others have other ideas. So it's going to be a bit of a free-for-all to get there.
Okay.
But it's good of ASMSC to at least allow that option. We'll see.
Right.
We'll have more later.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
So I'm supposed to talk about black sea bass, which was rather interesting. So black sea bass recreational fishery, there was an appeal by the states of Massachusetts right down to New York, four states. What had happened in February is the southern states, and I use that very loosely because the southern states have now been from Delaware to North Carolina, so I don't know how they all became southern states, but the idea was that they wanted to use more recent data, the northern states, 2011 to 15. By doing that, they get that nice 2011 year class in there, you know, through some of those years. And you can see their fishery took off, and you can see that that's higher biomass. Whereas the southern states, Delaware to North Carolina, wanted to have an earlier 10-year period, you know, ending in 2010. Well, actually, 5-year period, 2006 to 2010, because that was a better time for the southern states. And we have the 2015 year class, which is not as big as the 2011 year class, but we figure, hey, it's our chance to have a little bit of a fishery. And we will have a little bit better recreational fishery. The northern states, when it came to a vote, they knew they were outvoted 6-4, just like I told you, we get outvoted on striped bass all the time. So they reached a compromise where they said, let's split the 2 5-year periods and come somewhere in between. And they did that, and then they were very angry after doing that because they didn't want the southern states to have anything, really, essentially. And they want everything to be on the recent period. So they went off. They weren't happy. No one would look at anyone. And they filed an appeal, and the ASMFC leadership, which is a term that I'm trying to get used to, the leadership, because I think of a spaceship if I think of the leadership, but they said, yes, we acknowledge the appeal has merit on 2 of 3 conditions. And the appeal was well written, except for things like twice it said they were subsidizing the southern states by allowing them to have federal waters measure. And I'm saying subsidizing, have they looked at our landings? If we're being subsidized, we're not getting much for it. So there was a lot of concern at ASMFC, and there is right now, about appeals and noncompliance. New Jersey last year, you may remember recreational fishery, they didn't do what they were supposed to do. They did their own thing. Commerce said, it's okay. ASMFC went into a tizzy because they had never been treated like that before, to where now they had to worry. So it's been very different at ASMFC. They would like everyone to get along, and so they settled this appeal before it got to the table at the board. And they did it in a very creative way so that the final answer is we get to keep May 15th through December 31st for a recreational fishery. And that's the first time in probably since 2011 that we've been able to do that. So it'll be a continuous season from Delaware to North Carolina, May 15th through December 31st. The information there is that it's enough to take care of what we had in February, but I know that the guy who is now the regional administrator, and I can't help saying he's the guy who told the Mid-Atlantic Council and me that blue line tilefish rule would publish in November 1st, if Mike Avery can hear me back there. He's the regional administrator. He said he'll do the accounting later on. You know, I don't know about that. It's about 5,000 pounds. So that went very well. The northern states, New York to Massachusetts, did a contingency motion to where they said, okay, everyone can do what they were going to do. The southern states can liberalize. They can have that whole season. We don't have to reduce, but part two of our motion is that we want to undergo a discussion, more than discussion, want to undergo changes in allocation. And they brought in the commercial fishery. So the guy from New Jersey picked up on that and said, well, if you do that, then we're forced into it. So after a lot of discussion, they softened it. And now the ASMFC will be exploring different aspects of Black Sea bass management to include commercial. So that's pretty much it. You heard that, I hope, too.
I'm not sure I was there for that.
That was Thursday.
Okay.
All right, so that's all I have.
Thank you. Yeah. Sure, go ahead. Come on, come up and state your name, please, and
Wes Flow, just a question for Rob. Is there our January and February 2019 season still on the table?
It's there somewhere. So what's going on is the National Marine Fisheries Service is looking for a Wave 1 fishery with an LOA, letter of authorization. It would be taken out of our purview, and NMFS would handle that directly, and it's not settled yet. I think the guy from New York had a good proposition. He said, take it off the top. They used to do this RSA before the RSA program got in trouble, and they used to take 3% of the quota right off the top. He's suggesting they do that. Right now, a lot of the states were afraid to do anything because they didn't want to get in hot water later on in the year when there's bigger fisheries up north. So we don't know positively. You know, it was only North Carolina and Virginia. North Carolina didn't do anything in February. It's still alive.
All right. Is that all the update from the SMSC?
Not quite.
Oh, okay.
You left off Menhaden.
Good evening. My name is Ryan Jurley. I'll be providing the updates for the few South Atlantic board species that were addressed at the most previous meeting. I'll start with black drum. The most recent change to black drum was a proposal by the state of Maryland to reopen a commercial fishery that it had had historically and up until the mid-90s when they effectively cut down or shut down the commercial black drum fishery in the bay and would have pound netters who caught them as bycatch tag and get paid for tagging those fish instead. However, when that program ended, the commercial fishery stayed closed. And when the black drum fishery management plan was adopted by the ASMFC a few years ago, it had the stipulation that no commercial fishing shall be expanded or whatever the exact wording was, effectively prevented Maryland from reopening that fishery except for going through the process of an addendum or an amendment through the ASMFC. So that's what they had proposed. The TC, the Technical Committee for Black Drum, met, and Maryland's representatives indicated that this would be primarily a bycatch fishery. Even in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s, when there was no regulation on black drum, the average annual harvest was 11,000 pounds. And just to put that in perspective, Virginia's commercial quota for black drum is 120,000 pounds. So it's historically it's pretty small. Maryland has fewer pound netters now than they did in the early 90s. There are now the ASMFC allowed this proposal entailed a minimum size limit of 28 inches and a maximum vessel limit of 10 black drum per vessel per day. Now going back, the state of Maryland still has to go through its public hearing process, and to my understanding, the recreational anglers are not happy about this, so there's no guarantee that they get that 10 fish. It may be 5 or 7. So that's unknown, but that's what the ASMFC vote allows for. And so I had been in contact with Harry Rickabaugh, who's a biologist with Maryland DNR, just asking some further questions. Mr. Powers had concerns as the AP chair for the South Atlantic Board, concerns about potential growth for this fishery because it's not limited entry. And so we talked about the pound nets, and he said that, you know, pound nets are more restricted than they were then. There are fewer people doing it. It's an expensive fishery to get into. We know that it's thousands and thousands of dollars just to set up a new pound net. And that with gill netting specifically, obviously black drum are only in the Maryland part of the bay for a short period of time in the spring. During that time, Maryland has mesh size restrictions on gill nets, and I believe the maximum mesh size is 3.5 inches. And so with that mesh size, you're not going to be catching legal-sized black drum. And so he kind of further made the case that this is not a fishery that would get out of control, even though there are no limited entry permits or criteria for getting in. There's not going to be very high demand, and that there's not many ways for people to reasonably catch it beyond pound netting. So the TC and then the South Atlantic Board felt that there wouldn't be a problem with allowing this fishery to reopen and getting those few pound netters that effectively that bycatch allowance. So that was the only update on black drum and a couple other species, but anyone has questions on that?
Any questions, Tom?
The one thing that I would ask is that staff keep an eye on this. And it may be that we have 120,000-pound quota, but commercial quota, but I seem to recall the numbers were way less than that in recent years. And I'm just concerned with a slow-growing fish like this, and their minimum size is 28 inches versus our 16-inch, that they could easily, if somebody really directed, 100 people or 50 people could get in there and really just start slamming the fishery too hard from a overall spawning stock.
Okay. Yeah, and that's something that, you know, obviously it doesn't have as much teeth as the size limit and the bag limit, but there was There was obviously suggestions for monitoring of this fishery as it happened, and obviously we're going to keep an eye on it just because we do have our own black drum fishery. It's, I think in the last 10 years they've exceeded 100,000 pounds once, and they've gotten 80 and 90,000 pounds a couple times, but it is closer to 50 or 60,000 pounds of landings per year here in Virginia. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I had heard about that. No. So, you know, it's certainly something that we'll keep an eye on, and like I said, it's not even set in stone what Maryland's regs will be, just because, you know, obviously from 1997, I think, until now, this, you know, to the recreational anglers, this was a game fish, and they obviously got used to that that idea, and at this point, there's a little bit of resistance from the recreational anglers about reopening this fishery, probably citing similar concerns, but, you know, obviously the size limit is a double-edged sword. By having a 28-inch size limit, yeah, you're focusing most of your landings on larger fish, but at 16 inches, you may risk catching and harvesting fish that haven't spawned at all. So at least with a 28-inch size limit, you ensure that those fish have already spawned.
Okay.
So it is a trade-off, but, you know, if the focus is on larger fish, you are disproportionately targeting the more of the breeding, strong breeding populations.
All right. Thank you.
So I'll move on to cobia next because nothing was decided. This was more of an update. It's rare that cobia is so relatively quiet, but I forget if it was the South Atlantic Council rep or the National Marine Fisheries Service rep, reported on the stock identification workshop, which is the ongoing workshop to determine if that Florida-Georgia state line is the most appropriate boundary for splitting up the Atlantic from the Gulf group. And the results out of that so far suggest that the mixing zone is somewhere between Brunswick, Georgia, and around Cape Canaveral, Florida, which is really not that much different from what had come out of the previous stock assessment. And so obviously nothing is set in stone. The South Atlantic Fishery Management Council, not the ASMFC's board, but the South Atlantic Council, Federal Council, they ultimately have the authority to make the decision on where that line is. But the science is looking like it's suggesting that Florida-Georgia boundary is the most sensible place to keep it. I know a lot of our anglers were interested in getting that boundary moved back to the Keys, Florida Keys, where it was prior to the last stock assessment, with the idea being by bringing Florida back into the Atlantic group, your annual catch limit increases by an amount that may not be fully utilized by Florida. You know, you get that extra cushion in the quota, and if Florida doesn't catch it, then that's more fish to spread throughout the other states on the East Coast. But I will say that the bright side of this is that this result would be much more palatable to the South Atlantic Council and the Gulf of Mexico Fishery Management Council. So cobia is jointly managed by not only the South Atlantic Council, but the Gulf of Mexico Fishery Management Council as well. And the possibility of that line being moved around the coast of, you know, around the Florida Keys or somewhere down through Florida had really made them nervous. And with the idea of it staying at Florida, Georgia, both of those councils are much more comfortable with the Amendment 31, which is, should ASMFC get sole management authority of cobia. And so the South Atlantic Council and National Marine Fisheries Service representatives at the South Atlantic Board meeting of the ASMFC were very optimistic that at their June meetings, both the South Atlantic Council and the Gulf Council would vote to give up management of Atlantic cobia to the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission exclusively. This probably will give the states the most flexibility to manage how they want. It gives a little bit more flexibility in how to use data when making decisions. And, you know, even, you know, there's still going to be held to limits, but the annual catch limit as we know it now, it may morph into a different management target. The number may change. So there would be added flexibility if that became the result, and we'll find out in June when those two federal councils meet. The stock assessment is following this stock identification workshop. The data workshop is going to be late this year, and then they actually run the assessment next year. And I'm going to have to go off my cheat sheet here because some of these dates get a little confused in my head.
Understandable.
Let's see. Probably by the end of 2019, the stock assessment would be completed, and then the review would occur early in 2020. And at that point, whether South Atlantic Fishery Management Council is involved or whether it's just the ASMFC, that would then determine what happens from there, because the ASMFC can get amendments through faster than the federal councils can. So in terms of taking that stock assessment data and turning it into management decisions, there'd be a quicker turnaround time if ASMFC was the only player involved. So that's pretty much all I have for COBIA. If there are any questions, or if I missed anything, feel free to ask.
Anybody? Questions?
I have one. Georgia was okay with turning management over to The Gulf Council was okay with turning management over to ASMFC?
That's what the South Atlantic Council
even with their fish being on our coast?
Well, it's the ASMFC plan would only extend down to wherever that stock boundary is. So the idea that
the east coast of Florida would then fall in the Gulf under Gulf management?
Yeah, so it would still be managed jointly between the Gulf and the South Atlantic Council.
All right.
They'd be Gulf fish, but the South Atlantic Council would still retain their federal management authority on the east coast of Florida. And then from Georgia through New York, that annual catch limit, you know, all the management decisions would be left under the ASMFC.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's confusing, Gulf, Cobia, and the Atlantic Ocean. So. And then the last would be Spot and Croaker. Some of you who follow this may know, but for the rest who may not have followed it as closely, there were recently stock assessments completed, separate stock assessments for Spot and Croaker, but neither of them passed peer review. So Rob was referencing peer review earlier of a stock assessment when the independent experts come in, look at the model, look at how the stock assessment scientists used the data, was it appropriate, and they found that there just wasn't enough in those two models to be recommended for use in management. And so when a model does not pass peer review, then the board has to look to other metrics, other indicators, signs as to how we should be managing this fishery. So for a long time now, the technical committee for Croaker and Spot have been reviewing what's called this traffic light analysis, which you basically take the recreational and commercial landings values, you take all of these independent surveys, the trawl survey, you look at, you know, other states have trammel net surveys, there are offshore National Marine Fisheries Service ground fish trawl surveys. So there are a lot of independent programs that collect data on Spot and Croaker, and right now the technical committee and the South Atlantic Board are kind of going back and forth exploring different options for how should we be building this traffic light analysis. And the name comes from, based on what the relative trends are from year to year, you compare it to a historical reference period and say, are we below? Are we above that long-term mean? If we're below, it's bad. You get yellow or red color. So it's more of a visual, conceptual approach than these really complex stock assessment models. And so the idea is pretty good, and it's supported both by the technical committee and, you know, the board. But what's taking some time is figuring out which indices should we be including. We have a lot of different surveys to choose from, but you know, a lot of people have been concerned about Spot and Croaker. Are they moving offshore? Are they not coming into the bay? You know, the South and the Mid-Atlantic have kind of different opinions about what the states of these fisheries are. And so at this point, it's really just exploration phase. No decisions have been made. It's, you know, it's a lot of back and forth. Is there fishing mortality problems, or is it natural mortality? Is it just migration patterns changing? So until the TC can get, the technical committee can get a better handle on what we feel is really the underlying cause for changes in spot and croaker fishing. That's probably, nothing more will happen until a little bit more clarity is achieved. But obviously, I know that there's a lot of people up here who have experience with spot and croaker stuff.
Ryan, are you saying is the bottom line that there will be no chance of implementing any minimum length or bag limit until all these assessments are done and peer reviewed and all that?
Yeah, nothing would be done until the TC and the board, well, the South Atlantic Board of the ASMFC ultimately makes the decisions, and the technical committee will provide recommendations. But yeah, nothing would happen until the South Atlantic Board approves of these analyses. So it doesn't have a peer review process in the same way a stock assessment does. It's pretty much in-house. It's all technical committee and then the South Atlantic Board and then ASMFC staff. So at this point, it's trying to figure out, is fishing mortality even the problem? Because the only reason you would implement regulations is if you feel fishing is the cause of the change. But, there's plenty of factors that could be involved. It could be, it could be increased predation. Weak fish used to be very abundant in the bay. And some people believe that maybe as weak fish have declined, predators start feeding on spot and croaker more. And so putting in a season or bag limit for croaker is not going to do anything for that. So.
All right. Any other? Yes, Tom.
I'm sorry. I do think croaker is one of the most widely distributed recreational fisheries in Virginia. It's the data I actually trust the most from MRIP or whatever it is. Because it's so widely distributed, they get so many intercepts and everything. And the fishing has been down for like 10 years. I seem to recall that was the email I wrote when I got all grumpy. And we're not doing anything. And I'm sorry, such a fishery that is that highly executed as far as from a recreational standpoint and a commercial standpoint, you can't tell me that doing something about it to reduce the fishing mortality is not going to help the stocks. And I don't want to see us go down the same road that we went with weak fish. Oh, we don't know what's going on. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what's going on. We're still on a one fish limit for recreational fishery. And I think we only got that because if they closed the recreational fishery, they'd have to completely close the commercial fishery because of the state constitution. Because you can't have it for commercial purposes unless there's enough for recreational purposes. And the state needs to do something, or ASMSC, whoever's managing it, needs to do something about it because these fish, the populations are down.
But I agree with what Ryan said. If you're not catching, what difference does it make if you put a bag limit on it? They had a great winter in North Carolina this year on croakers. We were expecting a huge run coming up the beach. We had nothing. So for some reason, there was this big school of fish off the Carolinas at the boats. I mean, their numbers are going to be up this year. They never came close to the beach. They never came in the bay. So it's something, I don't know if it's predatory. The Bonnie Dogs boats were fishing at the mouth of the bay. When those fish were supposed to come in, were the dogs there? Is that why they didn't come in the bay? There's something, I don't know, but I don't see where doing that, if they're not being caught, is going to help. I agree with what you're saying there.
They are being caught. They
where?
What's the commercial landing line? I don't know. I mean, it's being caught, but the catch is down substantially.
Tom?
Yeah, to give an example, I referenced the number of surveys that we have. To give an example, ChessMap is a survey that occurs within the Chesapeake Bay, and then National Marine Fisheries Service has a groundfish survey that occurs a little bit farther offshore. If you look at the trend in ChessMap, it's down. They say there are fewer spot and croaker in the bay. The farther offshore you go in terms of the surveys, the better the picture looks. And so, that's what leads some people to believe that it's not that there are fewer spot and croaker left in the larger sense of the population. It's that they're in a different place. And I think some of those conflicting signals are what has led to managers saying, well, hold on, is this a fishing mortality-related problem? Because, you know, I guess the converse of that argument is there's been fishing for spot and croaker for decades and decades, and the population has been fine for all those years, and then in the last 10 years something has changed. So is that something we can attribute to fishing that's just not something that everyone's been able to agree on yet? Or is it some environmental factor that may have changed in the last 10 years that's led to lower landings, like them not coming into the bay in the first place? So
when you look at the total stock size, both inshore and offshore, is it higher than it was in the past or not?
Well, and that's the problem we run into is the stock assessment would have given us that estimate of stock size, but because it didn't pass peer review, we don't have those numbers to say, well, over the last 10 years, spawning stock biomass has done this. Obviously, the stock assessment produced those numbers, but if it doesn't pass peer review, it implies that we don't trust the shape of that trend,
right.
You know, and so it's hard for me to say, give any of the information about stock size because, you know, the stock assessments did not pass peer review. The traffic light analysis that I referred to is a relative concept. It's not going to say in 2015 there were this many metric tons of croaker and the next year there are this many. It's just going to say there was more or less compared to years past.
So, well, I happen to agree with Tom that just because we can't be we're not the only cause of the problem doesn't mean we can't save where we can with some reasonable regulation. So I would say recommend that we keep an eye on this and maybe in the next few when are they going to update the assessment, do you know?
Assessments are usually done on like a 5-year basis, and 3 to 5 years, and they just finished the spot and croaker last year. So it's probably not going to get done for another, not going to get started for another few years. At this point, you know, if, you know, the ASMFC meets next in August and they will be revisiting this traffic light analysis, and if the board can decide that, yes, this is the criteria we want to consider for, you know, looking at spot abundance and looking at croaker abundance, then they can initiate the addendum or the amendment and start implementing those changes. Obviously, it's within VMRC's power to do something more conservative than what the ASMFC mandates. And so if it comes to that, the commission always has the authority to say, well, we want to be more conservation-minded than what the ASMFC is saying. We can put a season in. But obviously, you know, that would be, I guess, atypical.
That's all right. We don't mind. Tom, do you think at the end of the summer we see what the landings are and if they look good or bad? Or
I'm just saying that they have been down for 10 years, and I think the commercial side's been down too.
Yeah,
and
yeah, both are were
and,
well
and
above.
I wonder if, for example, if we were to put a minimum size on them. And right now part of the problem is if you go out recreationally and catch them, you catch these little teeny fish and aren't worth keeping. If we put a minimum size on them, would that mean that later in the season, every year, we'd start catching fish that we could keep that are a reasonable size to keep? And the commercial harvest for marketable fish would go up. But and in addition to having a more spawning stock is part of the results of that.
Mm-hmm. What size do they spawn at, do you know?
I don't know the exact size, but
maybe not. Yeah. Not very big.
Yeah, because I...
All right.
Yeah. Could I put my 2 cents in here?
Please.
Croaker is one of the fish that goes in cycles. When I was a boy growing up, about 10 years old, it was back in the mid-1940s, there were so many croakers in the bay. The haul sailors could haul and catch 1,000 boxes, and they was 100-pound boxes a night. And they did it all summer long. And that lasted for about 3 years. And after that, they shut down. And they've been doing that ever since. It's a, you know, they're going to go through cycles. But I like Tom's idea about not saving them little ones, because if they can grow up and give you a better size catching fish, both ways, commercially and recreational.
Okay.
You know, it should be. I thought it was a size limit on croakers.
Maryland and Delaware have size limits for croaker, but Virginia does not.
Virginia does not, and it's always been because it's used as a bait fish.
Well, down south in the Gulf, they use them for cat food. They don't even eat them.
All right. Can we revisit this again in a few months? Tell us when do you think you would have any new information about landings and so forth? A year-to-date, say, comparison.
I mean, commercial, we could give preliminary commercial landings on almost a monthly basis. Obviously, there's a little bit of delay, 10th of the month or whatever.
Okay.
MRIP numbers, each wave. So, for example, the July-August wave will come out mid-October. The October-November wave comes out mid-January. It's always 6 weeks after that two-wave period ends. September-October comes out.
Croaker in the spring is real easy. You go down here to the James River Bridge parking lot, you see how full it is.
All right, so say.
But also after the August ASMFC meeting, there may be a decision on, because once they decide on which criteria to use, then we'll have an answer out of that. You know, we run these traffic light analyses, as we're evaluating them. And so at that point, there should be results of, there may or may not be results of what the board ultimately agrees on. They may want some minor tweaks and there'd be a delay after that, but by August we may have a better picture of what those analyses say, and the results of those analyses would then dictate a management response.
All right. Would you make a note that in August we bring this back up and look at the status?
The next meeting after August.
Well, but, yeah.
Okay. I'm just concerned that we don't do another weak fish scenario where we just watch a fishery collapse on us completely.
Don't watch too long, because before the stoplight, the broker was looked at because it crashed pretty fast in the late 50s and late 70s, and all took 2 years. So we had, instead of a stoplight, back in 2006, we really just looked at recreation and commercial landings and looked for that inflection point. And then close on 10 years, because in 2006, I saw that the number of croaker was still up recreationally, but the mean size was down, started to fall. And then we'll give an essence. So that's a problem. I think the South Atlantic seeds what we see. They're the seeding area. I mean, when this fish boomed in 1996, it really emanated from the South Atlantic. So we enjoyed everything for a number of years. 12 million pounds commercial, 6-7 recreationally for a number of years. And, we'll see what happens next. But we couldn't find croaker sample from 1989 and 90. You had to look really hard to be able to get some samples of croaker.
Oh, when I worked at D&M in the 80s, I didn't know what a croaker was. We never packed them. Never saw them.
Well, it looks like the cycles that Doug has reminded us of. So, but we do want to stay on top. We have now.
It's important.
In my idea.
The reason we don't have better science is because croaker is not striped bass. So if you get past a certain northern point, croaker is not really part of American.
Okay.
Or is.
Scup is.
Or scup.
So, we need better science.
Well, we're a lot more powerful as a recreational, at least, fishing industry now than we were back then. So we want to let up when you get to a low point so that we see these cycles that Doug has told us about. Yes, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Point of reference, there's nothing that would prevent Virginia from taking some precautionary measure a la size limits as referenced, even though ASMFC is still doing whatever they're doing. Correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
The only thing I'd add to that is we may have
so what?
All right. Okay, good. We'll keep that in mind.
We can move faster than they can.
Keep that on the radar. I think that wraps up your presentation from the ASMFC.
That's all I got, unless you have more questions.
The only thing I have left on my list is that there was some question about speckled trout.
And or menhaden, excuse me.
I'm sorry. Okay, well, want to bring up menhaden, but let's do speckled trout next. What do we know? The last meeting I missed, as you know, a whole bunch of us missed, apparently. Must have been contagious. Why did the commission not put any restrictions on?
The commission?
Yes.
First of all, this committee recommended no action.
Okay.
No one showed up to support a closure at the commission meeting. If they were there, they didn't speak. So that was...
I have a request to staff. This is for some analysis. One of the things that you hear that I heard from some recreational fishermen I were talking to about it, and some of the different clubs have different mindsets about this. I'm of a mindset that when we have, and Florida does this with snook, I know, when you have an event like we had last year, like we had 4 or 5 years ago, or whenever it was, where we had the cold. Especially on a fish like speckled trout, and not red drum. Now the breeders for red drum, they aren't here when we have one of these cold events. They don't get caught in it. We lose some year classes on the recreational and the little bit of commercial there is, but we lose those year classes, and there's nothing we can do to improve the recovery of that because the spawning fish are going to come in anyway, and they're going to spawn because they're the larger fish. But with speckled trout, they'll spawn when they're 10 inches long or whatever. If we can just let them spawn till June 1st or whatever, get that first spawn out to help give the population a boost again, that would be what we need. But the problem is you get recreational fishermen and commercial fishermen, too, who say, well, there's no science to support it. Well, you know, we have these trawl surveys and different surveys throughout the years that have been going on year after year that show what the relative abundance in the Chesapeake Bay is of different species. Can we look at that relative abundance and then look at the weather patterns during the winter before and try to get a metric that the agency can use, that the commission can use, to say, this year is a bad year for these fish, in addition to the anecdotal reports that we get, which are more than just anecdotal, that we did have a cold snap kill up in the upper part of the bay or in Lynn Haven or in the Elizabeth River or whatever, to put these closures in place. I'm not talking about the commercial fishery when it's on this bycatch because, you know, those are generally gill-netted fish when they're in that bycatch region. And they're dead fish anyway. They just don't survive. But the recreational fishery, in my opinion, should have been closed to June 1st this year. But staff, when I look at the minutes from the meeting, staff statement was, we have no science to support closing it. Well, I believe that the data's there. We just need to look at it and then come up with a metric that says it's time to close this fishery down this year.
That's what I was going to add. The advice we got from VIMS back in 2014, and Joe Semino, who presented it to the FMAC that month, he was citing North Carolina work, and we just don't have a good estimate of stock size. We don't have any, and we don't have a real estimate of the percent kill. Now, how extensive was it? My sense is the kill that occurred in 2015, primarily in the Elizabeth River, on just all these large fish, was the biggest one we've seen. And the citations for that year and ensuing years show it for those large fish. But by last year, we had one of the best speckled trout fisheries in 2017 that people were saying that they'd seen in their life.
And that's because, and I believe that's because we closed the fishery for 3 months so that they had a chance to spawn once.
In 2014 is when the closure occurred. Now, the commission also had folks that wanted to see the season close in 2015, and they opted not to close it. They couldn't see what, couldn't determine that there were real benefits. But one thing I didn't add is in 2014, neighbors, they decreased the possession limit from 10. It was 10 most of the year, and then for 3 months, essentially the hot ditch season, it was reduced to 5 fish with only 1 over 24. What they did do in 2015, they didn't close the fishery, but they maintained that 5 fish, only 1 over 24 inches year-round. So there was something that was added to it. And again,
it may not be a stock assessment, but I would like to know what metrics exist. And this is something you can bring back to another meeting. Or if they exist.
South Carolina has a criterion of 7.5 degrees Celsius, which is about 45 degrees.
Well, it always gets to 37 in the bay here.
So,
I mean,
so. That's there. Now, up here it's probably
and up here, it could very well be that it's a rapid decline in the seawater and the bay temperature so that they don't get a chance to get out and migrate down to Carolina or whatever. And it could be something that we also look at what happens in Carolina and say, okay, we had a cold snap and had a cold snap kill, and so did Carolina. That, you know, that's a metric to say the commission should do something. And it's something the commission could do in their March meeting and close the fishery till June, just to let them spawn, whatever is here, spawn once. But again, we need some metric that the commission can hear in advance from staff, this is what we're going to come in, when this event happens, we're going to come in and ask for these kinds of measures to be taken.
I mean, temperature would be the, if you can handle the temperature criteria, that's easier to measure.
Okay, Ryan, you had a question?
No, I disagreed with what he said.
No, I'm behind you.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I was just going to add one thing because with Joe not being here, you know, the idea of not being that, you know, I guess to be clear, it's not just a case of we don't have data to say one way or the other. Joe Cimino presented a time series from North Carolina speckled trout assessment. And there were years, you know, before 2014, years directly following cold kills where spawning stock biomass increased, even without a closure. And so it's not that, well, there's no data one way or the other. It's that sometimes spawning stock biomass decreases after a cold kill. Sometimes it stays the same, and sometimes it increases. So I think it wasn't just a, you know, inaction from a lack of knowledge, but inaction from mixed signals in the data.
Inconclusive data.
Yeah, exactly.
That was really summarizing.
I had to grab my laptop.
No, it's all right. I happened to talk to the new guy from North Carolina at the ASMFC meeting, the new fisheries director. And he mentioned that they did have a severe cold kill, but they're also seeing a lot of speckled trout right now. So I can see we get a mixed signal.
And just the anecdotal information on the year class strength that we saw in Virginia, the numbers of 9 to 12-inch speckled trout by the fall of the year, there was a lot of those fish around, and they don't seem to show up in the fish kill events, at least not Virginia. Right. Generally larger fish, which have 1-year-plus fish.
Okay.
Whether they went down to North Carolina and got killed, you know, in a cold shock event, but it seems like they're wired, they behave a little differently, and maybe they don't think they can tough it out in shallow water.
Okay. Yeah, member of the audience, if you could come up and give us your name and tell us what's on your mind there.
If I can get up, I've been sitting here so long, if I can get a wheelchair, get me over there. I can
give you
five. I'll make it as well.
Tip the chair for him.
What you said is exactly right. Tom, you said it right too. These small speckled trout are a different class of fish. I've been hall sanding for them for 55, 60 years. And them fish come down that beach this fall. All in little trout. Majority of them went right by the Navy Inlet, right all around Cape Henry to the southern. I've turned loose, I'm going to, a small estimate of 100,000 pounds of them that day. Did fish go somewhere and where they went? I don't know. If you think you can figure a fisher out, I'd like to hire you for 1 year. 1 year, Tom. I'd like to hire you for if you can figure a fish out. You can't figure one out. Just like he said about a lead fish, he's exactly right. I'm going to tell you why. I had a big argument with Dimitri with his pound net down there every year. For the last 10 years, I'd catch fish, he'd move his pound net over. The next year, I'd catch more fish. And the next year, he'd move his pound net over. Until finally, the Marine Resources come and wrote me a ticket. Because I'm too close to Dimitri's pound net. They carried me to court, and guess what? The judge run them all out of there. You know why? Because he lived there and watched Dimitri move his pound net. He brought them out, he laughed, he looked at me. Mr. Holloway, I bet you have trouble every time you catch a fish, don't you? I said, Your Honor, you're absolutely right. Dismissed. I wouldn't take it up with Marine Resources, and you know why.
All right. Would you give us your name for the record? I'm afraid
Robert Holloway.
Okay, Robert.
You will not know. And same thing with your spot and your croakers. Jimmy Rule's done a patrol survey up there off Rhode Island. They've never seen a spot up there in the last 2 or 3 summers. Spot big as your hand. And I think most of our problem in this bay is habitat. The flounder fishermen, all the sport fishermen, they've all caught hell on flounder fishing. There's no flounders. Flounders are not coming in this bay. If you want to get some flounders, get outside the lake tower on your hands. All the flounders you want in October, November, all you want. When we stop dredging crabs, quit turning this bottom over. You ruined Chesapeake Bay. I'll tell you what. You go home tonight, anybody in this room, take them a cinder block. Put that cinder block right on your grass and leave it 5 days and roll it over, and the grass is going to be dead under it. Where the sunlight don't hit it, nothing's going to grow. Now, here we go. Nothing's going to grow. This is what's happened to our nursery. That's what the problem with Chesapeake Bay is. See anything growing there? Filled up with slime and junk off the streets from the numbers of people. Huh? And our nurseries have gone straight to hell. And we need every fort. That's the 26th Street Bridge. That's a lot of water. Fish can't even live in it. 25 years ago, yeah, show them up there. 25 years ago, there was 15 feet of water.
The means.
Now there's none.
Pretty much the same.
And our federal government's going to do all this crap for us. We're going to clean the records up. Heard Obama say it, heard everybody say it, but it ain't that big. That's where you, all you little fish and stuff go. They have nowhere to go anymore.
All right, sir.
That's the 26th Street Bridge you see there with that tire in it. And the other one is right on Chesapeake Boulevard in Norfolk before you get to Georgia Seafood. All our nurseries are solid full of junk. Even on up Hampton Creek above all them bridges you go up there. Years ago, there was water in there. Now it's all filled in. They had a huge problem. It will over here. All the people on the boats are jumping up and down, raising cane about the coal dust from the coal piers blowing all over their boats. Come to find out, it wasn't coal dust at all. It was rubber off the tires off the interstate. Anybody in here give it any thought? How much rubber comes off your tires and how much goes overboard and what the world has done to our environment? If you want to catch spotted croakers, the best place to catch them in the summertime
is up the James River, above the James River Bridge there, a museum bar, where they've oystered all winter and turned that bottom over. Because the spot and the croaker's got to have somewhere to go feed. He's not going to feed on junk like that.
Right.
And when you take the habitat away from him, he's not going to be there. The head boat couldn't even catch a fish for the last 10 years off Ocean View on that oyster rock. And I remember working as a mate in 1950s. I couldn't cut the shrimp fast enough to get there in 5 minutes. Help everybody on the boat have a 5-gallon bucket full of fish and gone. It's not the fishing. It's our habitat. It's not overfished. At one time there was I think it was 400 or 4,000 pound nets on the day.
2,140 in 1942.
And how many now?
Probably about
65 or 70. So the effort has not been putting in. At one time there was 25 gill net boats in Little Creek. There's one. At one time there was 15 or 20 in Lynnhaven. There's two. And I'll tell you something. You can talk about your red drum you want. There's not a conch been caught, to my knowledge, last summer above the 3rd and 4th Island towards Cape Charles. All that area, we conched there for 30 years and caught all the conch we wanted. When you turn all these red drum loose, the red drum has got the bellies are full of the conch eggs, you know, the white strands, you see, solid full. So what you've done, I want to see the sport fishermen catch fish, believe me. My daddy had two head boats, and I worked on a head boat for years. But you cannot overproduce these big fish that will destroy the bay. Now, getting back to your lead fish again. Them rockfish offshore, Mike Howard, last 4 or 5 winters have been there. They're laying there feeding on them bunkers. Between that Cape Henry hole, outside that Cape Henry hole, and that light tower is 12, 14 miles. It's solid, 25, 30 foot deep, nothing but horn dogs lay there every winter. You can run a gill net overboard, go to the other end and pick it up, you've got 3,000 pounds in it in 5 minutes. Them rock will not lead through them horn dogs. They will not come through. But I'll tell you what happened this winter. I saw it happening, and I thought it was going to happen, but I didn't know for sure, but it did, and it happens every winter. We had that cold snap in January, and them fish went right to the southward, and them boats out there tagging them couldn't catch one off that tower, so they went to the southward, and they tagged them down there between 4A and 6. The minute that wind went to the southeast in the spring of the year, I'm going to show you what happened, okay?
All right, we need to make this quick, please.
Well, I'll make it quick, but I want to show you. I want to show everybody in this room what happened. I cut this off because I didn't want to interfere with nobody else.
Thank you.
When them fish went ashore there, them bunkers started coming ashore. And coming up on the beach, truckload after truckload after truckload, and duck. When that wind went to the southeast, them rock pushed them right up in the surf. And so many in the surf, it truckload after truckload after truckload, the crab potters down there filled them up with bunkers. There were 75 miles of bunkers. This is just one little place of them. Look at this.
It's like a big school.
That was just something. Here you go. I got a call one morning from one of the gill netters, Bobby Kreischer, and he said, Robert, there's so many bunkers from the end of Rudy Inlet to the sea buoy, they're all rolling over on their side. They're using all the oxygen up in the water. They're getting ready to die. 20 feet deep, 75 miles of them.
All right, Robert.
Now, where these bunkers went, Lord only knows. But they're there. Right. And I'll tell you something else. 2 weeks ago, that East Croker slipped right by us. I was up to Deltaville. Some good fellow there working on his boat, he says, hell, the kids have been catching all the croakers they want around the dock in the last 2 or 3 days. So the croakers come in this bay, slip right by you. There's nobody killing that anymore. How do you know they're going to be there if there ain't nobody to catch them?
Right.
No pound net fishing anymore. It ain't the commercial people are hurting it anymore. It's the environment. The numbers of people are destroying the environment. All the crap off your rubber, off your tire, all your chemicals, all your fertilizers.
Okay.
When we quit turning that bay over at you, all them stones and shells and everything is covered up with muck that deep, just like them pictures I just showed you. There's nothing for a fish to feed on there. Until we get the federal government involved in this and get our nurseries cleaned out and get them to dredge our nurseries, you're not going to have any fish in this bay anymore like we used to have.
All right, Robert, appreciate it.
And you can, we can sit back and talk about it till you fall over dead. It ain't going to do a damn thing. Destroyed it.
Well, you might be happy to know that the Blue Plains treatment plant has cut their nitrogen output by 75%. So that's one of the reasons, according to the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, that's one of the reasons the grasses are coming back. So we are making improvements.
When I haul on the beach down in the fall of the year,
mm-hmm.
the wind can go northwest. I can go down there and look at my net real close and see the toilet paper particles on it.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. That leaves Menhaden, I guess. I didn't see the latest update. But
you don't have to bring that up for me, Mr. Chairman. I already know.
Anyone has any interest, I'll be glad to tell you where things stand. I can do it really quickly.
If you may, if you can.
24 meetings of sitting at the board, Commissioner Bowman graciously took the board seat, and all it boils down to is the General Assembly never made any, you know, progress. There was no bill that got passed. Essentially, Virginia's fishing at the 2017 quota. So we didn't get any increase that way. As far as I can tell, there's this thing called relinquishment, which by December 1, South Carolina, Georgia, and Delaware relinquished fish into a pool. Virginia has 76%+ of that. None of that comes to us because there was no mechanism to accept it. So ASMFC did find a non-compliance finding for Virginia. The governor will receive a letter from ASMFC shortly. You know, that's all I heard yesterday. And, you know, right now it's a matter of what does the administration want to do compared to what the General Assembly wants to do. And I was not up at the General Assembly this year, so I can't give you firsthand information as to, you know, the set to that those two, the administration and also the General Assembly had. But when they found a noncompliance, they gave it till August. They had a substitute motion to take this up again in August. Will there be something done? I don't know. I think you know by now that the VMRC does not have authority over Menhaden. It's strictly up to the General Assembly. So, you know, that's pretty much it.
I think they put it off till August because there was some thought that the General Assembly might still be in session because of the budget agreement.
Put it in as a budget amendment.
It ends in June, though. That ends June 30th.
The odds of that happening are slim to none.
But I have a question for Rob.
Okay, Tom.
Does the state have to petition the Secretary of Commerce? Or because right now my reading of the tea leaves is that the state said, no, we're not going to object to this. But does the state have to be the person that goes
ASMFC
to the Secretary?
ASMFC, under the Interjurisdictional Act, did you want to tell them? Or
I'm just going to say it's not the state that's going to do it. It's going to be the Menhaden Management Board is going to go to the Interstate Fisheries Policy Board, formally, who then will have 10 days to turn it over to the Department of Commerce, and the Secretary of Commerce gets 30 days.
But
But does the Secretary of Commerce hear arguments from the state?
That's up to him to decide.
Goes one little step more, it goes to the full commission, which is essentially...
Forgive me.
No, you're right. Yeah. You've been
but
up there
it's
enough.
Up, it's up to the Secretary of Commerce of whether he's going to hear testimony from anybody.
And the Interior Secretary... The weird thing about the Interjurisdictional Act is the Secretary of Interior also gets the finding if it comes out as non... Yep, it's in the Act, but only Commerce makes the ruling. So, but yeah, that's been around the whole time. I never quite figure out why Interior gets it, but yep, does. So we'll see. Frankly, the agency did appeal, back in February, and the appeal was withdrawn. So, although I was rehearsing for most of a couple of weekends, I guess we just call that education. So,
okay.
So we'll see.
All right. Any other new business to come before the committee? Seeing none, motion to adjourn. Oh, I'm sorry. Next meeting, we don't have anything on the docket yet, do we?
This has been such fun tonight.
Well, good.
I hope you can wait till we come up with a few other things that need to be talked about. By the way, it was very important to have Mr. Jenkins here tonight. You've waited a long time.
I agree.
We didn't really have anything burning, any substantive issues after speckled trout, so appreciate you waiting this long and having that patience. And then what we'll do is we'll definitely have other things to talk about.
All right.
But I think it's on an as-need basis.
Okay, then, a motion to adjourn. Anybody?
Motion.
Second? Okay. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Are you familiar with the modern weekend?
Oh, a little bit. Where they're trying to...
Trying to separate the nurses from the regulation.
No, I hadn't heard that. I know they were trying to modernize it so that we don't have to stick to these deadlines that are arbitrary.
I'm not familiar. First time I've heard of it.
Yeah, they...
I don't know how I'm still the AP chair.
A couple of the recreational groups.
I got real grumpy when Croker when they came up and said,
to try to get more flexibility
no,
than having just the government set a particular date and say this is when you have to be rebuilt by.
Harvest is the MREP and the commercial.
It doesn't consider all the things that get in there. How you doing?